This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, student producer Matt Skiba talks with some students about the Fifth House apprenticeship they're working on. We go into the jazz improvisation classroom with our jazz guitar instructor, Sandy Williams. We ask flute professor Ann Reynolds about her Desert Island disc. Band director Craig Paré tells us about the upcoming concert from the University Band, and we hear more great music from our Music of the 21st Century composer, John Corigliano. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. At DePauw, we offer a jazz improvisation course, and here to chat with me about it is our guitar professor, Sandy Williams. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. So you've taken on the jazz improv course. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
Well, we have a class full of mostly classical musicians who've never had an improvising experience before, other than Eric Edberg's improvising class, which is structured a little differently. But I teach them some repertoire and also some vocabulary and try to get them swimming in the water as soon as I can.
So are they all musicians? Are all performing musicians?
Yes. We've got two violinists, viola, two French horns, three trombones, trumpet, and a vocalist.
Wow.
And a vibraphone player.
And so they come in, and what are you doing with them, first of all? Just acquainting them with scales and chords?
Scales and chords, and mixing arpeggios and scales to try to create lines instead of just running up and down scales. Mm-hmm. Trying to have them investigate the color tones of chords when they're playing solos. Mm-hmm. And we play along with play-along tracks. My bass player, I make him work. I make him walk bass lines.
And so basically coming off of the stereo, they have a rhythm section playing along.
Yes.
And then these really unusual instruments for jazz improvisation, French horn, for example, are improvising.
Yes. And some of the music I give them is just in concert, so they have to transpose, which is a really good experience for them. And I've also been spitting out parts for some of the solo vocabulary lines, transposed for F horn and viola. And that kind of speeds things up for them.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Are they doing any transcriptions?
A couple of them have expressed interest in slowing down software that helps enable them to do that.
Yeah, explain that.
Well, when we were growing up, I'm sure you were in this generation, we took turntables and slowed them down to half speed, which also brought the pitch down one octave. But hey, it was the best we could do, and we worked with it. But now, with software, you can slow things down incrementally, keep the pitch the same, or fine-tune the pitch. If the original recording isn't at concert pitch, you can move it around. Or for bass lines, you can move things up an octave, and you can hear the bass lines very clearly. So, I mean, it's just an incredible tool.
Yeah, it's amazing. So in our day, we would actually slow down the turntable so that we could transpose. And when you slowed it down to half the tempo, then the result of that was it plays an octave lower, because that's what an octave is. It's a vibration of twice or half the speed. So in our day, we would actually slow down our record player so that we could listen to this over and over. But now, because of software, you can actually pick the tempo. I mean, it's crazy how that works. And the pitch stays the same. So you can actually move right along.
And pick the section of the recording. If there's one little 2-second line that's driving you nuts,
you can hear it over and over, which is a heck of a lot easier than picking up that needle.
Yep. And there some software actually has visual representation, will kind of guess the notes for you. But I personally don't believe in that. And I don't trust it either. I'd rather trust my own ear.
So what's the value of transcription?
Well, jazz is basically a folk art that gets passed down. And it's not something you can get in a cookbook and then bake the cake. You really need to listen to it to absorb it and get the proper vocabulary and pronunciation.
And you hear these masters doing it, and you're really learning at the feet of the masters.
Right.
And sometimes, especially in the case of someone like Dizzy, or Bird, they're so masterful that we've got to slow them down.
Right. And what you find is most of those masters have their own vocabulary that they developed over time. Some of them, like John Coltrane, you could sort of equate to Picasso, where there's the early, middle, and late period. But really, if you study Bird, you're going to hear the same licks over and over again.
And the power of the transcription is that you've written those down, you know what they are, and now you can own them yourselves and put your own spin on them.
Right.
And then pretty soon it becomes your vocabulary instead of Bird's.
Yeah.
And we're all really the amalgam of everyone we've ever heard anyway as jazz musicians. And
sure.
So the more we put into the top, the better the stuff that comes out the bottom.
Sure.
Right. It sounds like a fascinating class, and I appreciate your taking time to come in and chat about it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hi, this is Matt Skiba. Rachel Robin and Dane Hickey are with me today to discuss their upcoming recital. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
So tell me a little bit about what's on the recital.
I will be playing a Beethoven sonata, and I'll be playing all three movements. So that's a major work for a piano performance major. And then I'm also playing a selection of pieces by a composer named Chabrier. I didn't really know of him until my teacher suggested I look at these pieces. They're very French. They're very pretty. I'm excited to be playing them. He was writing during the time of the Impressionists, but his music is more late romantic.
Cool. Cool. What about you, Dan?
I, too, am playing a pretty French piece, a fantasy by Philippe Gobert. I have an unaccompanied piece by Donald Martino that is very technically challenging. And then I'm closing with a movement of a double concerto by Cromer.
And when is the recital?
Saturday, March 15th at 3 o'clock.
And it will be in Thompson?
Yes, it will.
Okay. Well, thank you both for coming in and doing this today. And also, congratulations to both of you on being winners of the concerto competition.
Thank you.
Thank you.
From our Music of the 21st Century Chamber Music Concert of February 13th, here are flutist Josh Levine and harpist Alicia Petroni performing Voyage by festival guest composer John Carigliano. Thank you.
So it's been a while since we've shipped anyone off to the desert island, and we decided to bring in our flute professor, Anne Reynolds, so we could boot her out and send her off to an island. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you, and it would have a palm tree.
It would one? Just one?
Oh, that's all I need.
Okay, just one. All right. Mm-hmm. But what we do here on Music for Life is send someone off to an island with a defective iPod that can only play 5 minutes of music. And then if you could only listen to 5 minutes of music on this island all alone, what would those 5 minutes of music be comprised of? And the answer is...
Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong singing Summertime from the album Porgy and Bess. It was made in 1957, and it's 4 minutes and 58 seconds long.
Now, wait a minute. There's no flute in that.
That's fine.
That's okay with you?
Yes.
And so why Satchmo and Ella? What brings you to that piece?
Well, first of all, it's one of my favorite pieces, and I was astonished to learn, no, I guess not so surprised to learn, that it's the most covered song ever.
Is it really?
33,000 times it's been covered.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And I love this tune, but best of all, I love the contrast between Ella, who is smooth and golden and warm, and Louis Armstrong, who both plays and also sings with his kind of gravelly Satchmo commentary voice. I love Gershwin. He's amazing. And Gershwin was a big influence on classical music, and classical music was a big influence on him. Mm-hmm. Apparently, one of the things that you can say about him is he learned a lot from Chopin because he wrote very simple melody and very complex bass parts because they weren't meant to be sung. Mm. And I have thought about, okay, 5 minutes of music, that's all I get. But that would resonate in your mind and I could think about his harmonies, which are amazing. Mm-hmm. I could think about how she sings, which is crazy good. I could adore Louis Armstrong because he had so much charisma and so much character in everything. You just are amazed. And if I just wanted to, you know, think about stuff, I could think about improvising on that, which I'm not very good at improvising at all. And I think that would be something fun to think about on a desert island. So that's where I come from.
Wow. What a fantastic choice. That entire Great American Songbook with the two of them is so rich. And you do hit on the dichotomy of her smooth and beautiful style and his grovelly and not so connected way of doing things, and then his improvising over it as he's going. And as I understand it, and it's been a while since I have read about those, but as I understand it, that's all pretty much one take stuff. They just put him in the studio and gave him the song and said, record this. And they came back two or three times to do different sets of songs, but it's all almost live.
Well, that would be right. I mean, 1957, we didn't have digital. We had people with tape and razor blades and splicing blocks, and you didn't want to do that. And these arrangements, Russ Garcia did the arrangements, and they're very, very beautiful as well. But there's strings, there's everything on it.
And, you know, if you've got Louis and Ella on your island, you probably won't be alone for very long. I think there's probably going to be some folks wanting to join in.
Well, that would be fine with me.
Okay, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Fish are jumping.
Hi, my name is Matt Skiba, and this is another installment of the Student Corner. With me today, I have Susie Miller.
Hi.
Eleanor Price.
Hi.
And Dan Hickey.
Hello.
Today, we're going to be discussing what's been going on this year with Fifth House and the upcoming events that are going to finalize the year and their residency with us. Dan, could you tell us a little bit about what's been going on this year with Fifth House? Because it's not really a class, it's more of an ensemble. Could you kind of explain that setup?
Yeah, basically, we signed up for it as a chamber music credit, even though there's a lot more work involved than a normal chamber group. But essentially, anyone who was interested signed up. We got split into quartets, kind of how Fifth House operates, where it's a larger group, but depending on who's available for a performance, they'll send those people. The first time they came, they gave us a show that they had written, a script and the music and everything. And so we just learned to do the show, how to perform it and see like what their thing is all about and how they do that. And then the second time they came last semester, they charged us with the task of creating our own show and finding teachers to work with and a school to perform it at. I know we've started performing the old show as well. My group went up to Orland Park in Illinois and performed. And right now all the groups are kind of collaborating together to write a new show.
Okay, cool. So, Eleanor, what has it been like to work with a group like this that has such an innovative way of presenting music and teaching the kids something at the same time?
It's been a lot of fun. I signed up originally because I wanted more playing experience, and that's been really useful to me. We play in kind of unconventional sets. Like, I play the flute, but I played with a trombone and a marimba and, like, a recorder, so that was fun. It's just been a good experience. I wasn't really in for it for the education originally, but now I think it's really fun to think of ways to teach kids how to do things. I like thinking of weird little metaphors you can use through music to compare to learning, and that's been a lot of fun.
Definitely. So, Susie, normally as instrumentalists, we're not really too much into acting or anything like that, but how is that different with Fifth House?
Well, for our program, we have to obviously be very animated because we are giving a presentation in front of a lot of younger children who do not have great attention spans. And so it's been really fun, and it's been a challenge having to not only perform well, but then talk about what we did and why we did it, and then get their input and get them to participate as well. It's been nice because we had workshops with Fifth House last semester, and they helped us to develop these personalities.
So with an age group kind of young, because we work with mostly elementary school kids, what kind of things have you been working on to teach them? Obviously, because we can't teach them Algebra 2 using music because they're in elementary school. So what kind of things have we been working on showing them through this?
Well, the first show that Fifth House gave us was called Music Can Tell a Story. And so essentially it was using music to explain things like plot, characters, dialogue, like all these basic parts of a story that kids in grade school would be learning about. We're still developing our next show, which is also language arts related, but slightly elevated class level. So we're going to be looking into more things like using cadences as resolutions and things like that, slightly more sophisticated ideas. But I know that Fifth House has shows about, they have a physics show, other kinds of science shows. Like, it's really not easy, but very possible to adapt it to a lot of different subject areas.
Cool. So what would all of you consider your favorite memory from working with Fifth House this year?
It was really a pleasure to get to know the members of the ensemble. The flute player's a really nice person. She came and gave a sort of studio demonstration to the flute studio. She was just really helpful and cool to talk to. The entire ensemble, when they've come to work with us, have been very helpful and very just accepting of any questions we have. So it's been a really good experience also to learn from them and to learn from fellow students.
Cool. Susie, what about you?
I'd have to agree about the workshops. It was really great getting their input and getting to know them. But it's also been a lot of fun this semester, starting from scratch and doing our own thing with just the members of DePauw who are in the Fifth House apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. So I've really enjoyed that.
Dan, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I would say by far the best moment I've had was when my group got to actually perform the show in front of a live audience. It was very rewarding. The kids seemed really into it. As I understood it, they didn't really get very many field trips or like fun things that some of the other kids got. So they were super psyched when we were there. Like, they were totally into it, and it was really great.
Well, it's good we can get them that opportunity. Personally, I would probably say my favorite part of it was during recital hour when we all had to come up and perform in front of our peers, because although they're not the age group we were aiming for, we still got a really good response from them, and it was still a lot of fun. Well, for all of our listeners out there, Fifth House will be back March 4th and 5th, and they will be back for their final performance on Sunday, May 11th at 3 p.m. For information on how to get tickets for this upcoming event, please go to the School of Music website. Thanks, everyone, for coming by.
Thank you.
From our Music of the 21st Century Chamber Music Concert of February 13th, here's Mei Pang performing January 3rd, 2008, the second movement of Winging It, Improvisations for Solo Piano by festival guest composer John Corigliano. Thank you.
On March 9th at 3 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium, the University Band has some great music in store, and here to chat with me about it is both our University Band conductor, Dr. Craig Paré. Welcome.
Thank you.
And our clarinet professor, Randy Salmon.
Thank you.
We were just chuckling before we went live on the air because Randy is also a great jazz musician, and the question of jazz musicians and their ability to keep the gig straight sometimes questionable. So when we were checking the date, Randy got this funny look on his face and said to Craig, "Oh, I can't make that gig." But it was a joke. It's really going to happen. So
thank you.
So Randy, tell us what you're playing.
Well, I'm going to have the opportunity to play the Artie Shaw Concerto, which is one of those pieces that is often done with piano, but rarely with larger ensembles. It was originally written with orchestral accompaniment, and also there was a jazz ensemble arrangement. But we were fortunate enough to find recently an arrangement that actually hasn't been out very long for concert band and clarinet. So looking forward to
it. Wow, that's fantastic. How'd you find that?
The internet.
Yeah?
Actually, the way YouTube videos go up these days, I saw a recording with I think it was an Air Force band that was with a soloist. And I saw the full symphonic band playing, so I started to do some research, and we found a European publisher that had published this. And it's nice because the setting is nice. It's a different sound than a jazz big band, but the color and the flavor is still there with the soloist.
Wow, you always do a great job of bringing interesting programming to the stage.
Thank you.
You find some really cool things. And I'm not familiar with this for concert band. I didn't even know it existed, so I'm really looking forward to this. Well, so what's it like to play with a band? Because you're used to playing with a big band, but not with the concert.
Absolutely. But this particular piece is often done as a contest piece with piano, so it's something I'm familiar with. But it really lacks without a drum set player, for example. So being able to perform it in a larger setting is wonderful. And this is a new experience for me because it's a new arrangement.
Right.
And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Artie Shaw always had been overshadowed by somebody like Benny Goodman.
Right.
But he's a very interesting character, and he writes in many ways outside the box. So there are a lot of different elements in his music that I find very interesting.
So did they have to change the clarinet part when they moved from piano to band, or is it exactly the same clarinet
part? It's exactly the same, but if you really do some research, it was only approximate in the beginning. So the notes, there are some notes that are actually interpretive and could be changed on the performance. But yes, it's the same as the clarinet part in the piano accompaniment.
Wow. So how's the band feel about be getting to work with one of their professors?
They love it. They love it. Every time we get a chance to bring a professor in, they love it. And Randy's, we've worked together on a number of pieces. Michael Dougherty's Brooklyn Bridge, Weber, I think, concerto that we worked on before. So it's really, the students get a chance to really work with a faculty member up close. And this style we don't often touch on.
Right.
Except in Bernstein or some things that maybe have a jazz flavor but aren't jazz. So they're really enjoying this.
Wow. So the band has got this experience twice because you just did Blue Shades, which is a very jazz-inflected thing last semester, correct?
Right.
And now this semester we have this jazz-inflected version. And boy, Randy, you've been around the horn this year because you played with the jazz ensemble as a tenor player.
Right.
Then you played with the orchestra on the Corigliano.
Right. Absolutely.
And now playing with the band on the Artie Shaw. We're getting our money's worth out of you this
year. It's great. That's what I like to do. So I love the opportunity.
So what else is on the program, Craig?
An overture fanfare, United Artists, by American composer Kenneth Fuchs, who teaches at University of Connecticut. Crossing Parallels, by a young lady composer who was a student of Aaron J. Kernis, who was here as part of the Music for the 21st Century a while ago, Catherine Salfelder. It's a work to me that needs to be recorded. It's a contemporary sound, and it's a mixture of Renaissance, Baroque, and 21st Century compositional styles.
Wow.
Really interesting colors. And we're going to finish with the Ives Variations on America.
Wow. Well, you're taking on the big dog there. How's Variations on America going with the band?
They enjoy that. It features each of the sections, and they enjoy when they're in the spotlight.
Yeah, that's a challenging piece. For those in our audience who don't know Charles Ives, he writes this really adventurous music. And it's interesting, as a child, his father taught him to play a chorale at the piano and sing it. then had him play the left hand in one key and the right hand in another. Mm-hmm. Then he had the left hand in one key, the right hand in another, and sing in a third. Then it was the bass line in one key, the tenor line in a second key, the alto line in a third key, the soprano line in a fourth key, and sing in a fifth. And as he developed all of these ability to hear in multiple keys at the same time, his idea of tonal structure and our idea of tonal structure are kind of different.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a really challenging piece, these Variations on America. How would you describe them?
Close to the way you just described, in different keys sometimes, a variety of different styles. It's set straight ahead as a hymn. It's set as a polonaise. It's set as a circus-type calliope-type music. there's a variety of different styles in this music, and it's the challenge for the players is technique to be able to play cleanly and well and fluidly and effortlessly.
Wow. And I'll bet it's fun for you, Randy, to actually be on stage with your students.
Oh, I'm
sure it's fun for them.
Definitely.
I know when you came in and played with the big band, you know, it was fun to watch them watch you. So
sure,
you're up
absolutely.
On front playing, you know, and they're behind you, so you're not seeing their expressions. But when you put a professor on stage to perform with you, boy, the whole band raises to the new standard, and it's a great sharing experience. So we're certainly looking forward to this concert. It's on March 9th. That's a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in Kresge. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Matt Skiba. Josh Levine and Andrew Wilkie are with me today to talk about their upcoming recital. How are you guys doing?
Doing just fine.
Good.
Can you tell me a little bit about the recital?
Sure. It's coming up on March 15th, which is a Saturday, and it's at 1 p.m. I'm certainly excited to play it. I think we've each got four pieces, and the last one that we're doing together is a piece with our quintet, and I'm certainly very excited.
Yeah, me as well.
What kind of things can we expect to hear on the recital?
I have a flute and harp duet that was actually composed by John Coriano. I performed it for him just over a week ago, I guess. And I have a very romantic piece. It's like 12 minutes long, but it's absolutely wonderful to play. I really enjoy it. Another piece I've got is a solo flute piece that is very interesting. It portrays an emotion more than demonstrates technical proficiency, but it's moving. It's difficult to play because it's about sadness and desolation, and it's difficult to put myself in that mindset, but it's a lot of fun to play, and it really takes a lot out of me. So it's a fun piece.
Awesome. Nice. Andrew, what can we expect from your end?
Just playing some standard bassoon and piano pieces, an Adler sonata. It's odd. It's very modern. It's emotionally complicated, but it's really fun. I think people will enjoy it. And then I'm playing some other straightforward standard pieces, a romantic piece, a classical piece. And then our quintet at the end is pretty exciting, I think.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like a Hollywood score. It's a lot of fun to play.
Oh, that'll be awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you both for coming in, and we look forward to the recital.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks.
From our Music of the 21st Century Chamber Music Concert of February 13th, here are tenors Joseph Lepick, Lance Orta, and Lucas Wassmer, flutist Nina Dugan, oboist Catherine King, clarinetist Dan Hickey, harpsichordist Carla Edwards, violinists Dan Risner and Susan Miller, violinist Anna Urso, and cellist Sam Kelly, under the direction of Craig Paré, performing Poem in October by festival guest composer John Corigliano.
It was my third year. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePaul Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePaul Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gatdula, Matt Skiba, Rachel Clark, Katie Sherman, and Burke Stanton. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
It's Music for Life.